Ladies and gentlemen, you know what that sound means. It means it's episode 171 of the Personal Arrogance Podcast, brought to you by the Bald Move Network. I am one of your hosts. I'm here every week. My name is Eric on the weekly, Walquist. And joining me this week, as he does each and every week, is the other host of the show. His name is...
I'm Jesse. Phoenix Jones' new love interest, Wilson.
Phoenix Jones' new love interest? Jesse, you gotta let me know when you find romance on the mean streets of Seattle.
Well, it just happened.
Okay.
Now that Phoenix Jones and Purple Rain are officially broken up.
I was not aware.
It's breaking news.
Mm-hmm.
So... breaking hearts and breaking news here on the podcast. But where Purple Rain is leaving his life, I'll be there to fill that void.
Purple Rain, Phoenix Jones. I mean, the first dance writes itself. It's really a shame.
Yeah.
Can you explain Phoenix Jones to people who are from Australia?
He's a guy who lives in Seattle who dresses up in a costume mm-hmm. and fights juggalos.
He's a real-life superhero.
He tear-gasses people.
He tear-gasses the shit out of people.
He has some collateral damage that he gets in trouble for, because that stuff's okay in the movies, but in real life.
Yeah, I mean, if you are breakdancing and maybe smoking a little jazz cigarette in Belltown, you're going to get fucked up by a Phoenix Jones. Or if you're a drunk guy who's a little overconfident, he is going to will you into a fight that is technically legal and then kick your ass. There's video of him doing this online.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to fight him, but strangely, I do want to fight him. Although it wouldn't go very well.
Well, you know, he's a Taekwondo master.
Uh-huh.
And the other part about this is, you know, he's not really the superhero that we need, but he's a superhero we deserve in this city.
But I got brujitsu.
That's true, man.
So any sort of keg-shaped objects I can move.
Yeah.
And he's built like a keg. He's a stout man.
He is a stout man, and he wears that body armor. He basically is a keg.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to do the keg throw.
Yeah, just give him the old keg toss.
The classic keg toss.
It's lights out, Phoenix Jones. But he'll rise again.
Jesse, you're the perfect supervillain for Phoenix Jones.
he's like, why? What's your problem?
That's your supervillain name. You're the keg tosser.
That's the thing you really open yourself up to, I think, if you're going to be a superhero in real life. It's not that, like, you're going to get beat up by one of those juggalos one day. It's that some person might obsess over you and try and be your villain.
That's true, man.
I don't want that kind of relationship with someone.
Well, it's, you know, it's the other side of the coin. Like, one cannot live without the other. For every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
I'm looking through a lot of Purple Rain photos on Facebook right now. And they're both unmasked in a lot of them.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be hard to find either of these people. Well, also, Phoenix Jones has a gigantic flat top.
Phoenix Jones was unmasked. He got arrested by the police and then came out and unmasked himself in a press conference. Oh. It's like real superhero stuff going on.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I think once you're unmasked, you're like a Mexican wrestler.
Mm-hmm. Luchadore.
Mexican wrestlers are actually way better superheroes than Phoenix Jones and company.
Yeah, you know, that's why I always liked Bane as the Mexican wrestler. Like, you know, in the Nolanverse, I really feel like Bane and Killer Croc could have been two, like, underground wrestlers.
Uh-huh.
And one of them's a luchador and the other one is just, like, Killer Croc, but he's, like, an homage to the 80s WWF fighters. And then they...
I still haven't seen that movie.
What? Oh, you haven't seen The Dark Knight Rises?
No.
Oh, man. Well, I do own it if you want to borrow it. Speaking of...
I don't have a DVD or Blu-ray player right now, actually.
I have a DVD player you could probably borrow, too.
That's okay.
Speaking of
that's
keeping...
you lent me, like, six DVDs. I didn't watch a single one.
Oh, yeah, that's true. speaking of general business, what are you drinking this week, man?
General Business could be my supervillain name. I'm like, I'm a defect, a Marine Corps general who defects and becomes a Fortune 100 business owner.
Right.
General Business.
Well, it's set in a dystopian future where corporations are countries, and their private security forces are military.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
General Business.
Okay, I'm drinking free beer from work. What are you drinking?
I am. Okay, so, you know, I love the Weed Whacker from Terminal Gravity. It was an awesome winter seasonal that for some reason was overstocked at my local grocer. So they were selling it well into October. And I loved the hell out of it. It was such a good session. It was delicious. 4.8%. Really delicious beer. Great to watch during football games. So in Terminal Gravity, when I saw that they had the winter seasonal, I was like, well, I got to pick that up because I'm becoming a fan of this brewery. So Terminal Gravity Festival, the strong winter ale, it is also really, really good. And it is the antithesis of a seasonal. It's coming in at 8.4%. It's literally the inverse of the 4.8% winter seasonal session ale. So
that's funny. That'd be funny if you're a brewery that only had two beers.
Uh-huh.
And they were just the inverse of each other.
The 4.8 and the 8.4.
Yin Yang Brewing Company.
Have you had any of this Terminal Gravity?
You know, I'm looking them up. I definitely recognize the name. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I have.
They're based in Enterprise, Oregon, which I think is the perfect place for the general business comic book to be set. but yeah, they're from Oregon, and everything I've had so far I really like. So Terminal Gravity, check them out.
Check that out.
Speaking of that, do we have a Detto for this week?
I don't.
All right, let's just do it to Russell Wilson, man, because the Seahawks freaking looked great on Sunday.
Yeah, that was that's the thing about football, is like you want a performance like they had on Sunday where you mm-hmm. go out and you take the lead and you don't lose it. Yet, you know, the Tampa Bay game was way more exciting.
Yeah, but I also didn't feel like I had an ulcer after the Falcons game.
Isn't that the fun of sports, though?
I guess so. I mean, that's the thing about football is like, literally in the NFL, yes, there are great teams and there are terrible teams, but the difference between the great teams and the terrible teams is really quite small.
Right.
Like, it's just execution. Like, it's yeah. Literally, they call it the game of inches for a reason. And, like, you can come out and beat Tampa Bay and go up 21-0 on, you know, one of the best teams in the league. But now the Seahawks, 9-1, so the San Francisco 49ers lost. And they now have 3 losses on the season. You know what that means, dude, because they're playing the Saints this week, 49ers and Saints. That means we got to root for the 49ers this week.
What? No. What? No.
Yeah. Because
oh, for home field.
Yeah, if the 49ers beat the Saints and at least have 3 losses, and then they're both also coming to Seattle after the bye. So if Seattle can win one of those 2 games, then they basically have home field advantage locked up. So we got to root for the Niners this week.
I guess that's a win-win.
Yeah, it really is. Either way, like honestly, like if the Niners win, it's like, oh, that's really good for the full home field advantage. And then if the Niners lose, it's like, yeah, fuck the Niners.
The Niners aren't going to win, though.
They're not going to win, man.
Not at the Superdome.
No, no, no. So anyway, and Russell Wilson did really well in this game. I was very happy. And the Goblin did great, too.
Yeah, the Goblin, that one-hander.
Yeah. Golden Tate, the Goblin Tate.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get to some listener feedback this week. We got a handful of voicemails, and a couple people decided that their voicemails were so nice, they do it twice. So let's start that one off. This one's coming to us from Texas.
Hey, guys, this is Sean from Fort Worth, and about the Christmas decorations and stuff coming up, we just had a strict family rule growing up that they could never go up after my birth until after my birthday. My birthday is March 15th, which this year happens to fall on 2 days before St. Patrick's Day.
Mm.
So, yeah. Anyways, I'm saying that all I want for my birthday is nobody to go out and drink ever again.
What?
Yeah, off my back.
I think Sean might be taking us up on this drunk dial thing.
Mm.
We might have to revisit the drunk dial thing. We've gotten some doozies lately. Let's move on. We're going to Denver next. Let's hear what we have to hear.
Hey, Eric and Jesse. This is Cody from Denver again. I was just calling in for a couple things this week. First off, I was really sad to hear you can't do the Get Off My Running Back anymore, Eric. It was an awesome podcast, and I was looking forward to hearing some talk about, well, the Broncos this week, because let's be honest, the game of the week is coming up, and it's going to be an early one. Kansas City Chiefs and Broncos, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Anyway, and also, by the way, awesome game for the Seahawks this past weekend. Nice flea flicker. And the other thing I want to talk about was some news about Marvel, namely that Netflix is picking up shows for, let's see, Luke Cage, Daredevil, Iron Fist, and Jessica Jones, which would be pretty crazy. And I was wondering if you guys could talk about that, and maybe what other low-level, like, more obscure characters would be awesome to see on Netflix. Anyway, that's all I got. So, get off my back.
Get off my back. Yeah, actually, oh, my. Wow.
Delayed reaction
there. Okay, well, actually, I'm going to have to table that conversation because it might come up a little later in the show about superheroes. But yeah, Game of the Week is coming up this week.
That's going to be fun to watch.
Kansas City and then Denver. The only thing that's going to top that is in 2 more weeks when Kansas City and Denver square off once more. So, yeah, and I appreciate the get up my running back love. Thank you so much.
I'm predicting the beginning of the decline and fall of the Denver Broncos.
Ooh, because Peyton Manning's a little hurt now, and he's definitely going to play in this game.
Is he going to play?
Oh, yeah, he's definitely playing.
Okay, well, he could get hurt again. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, there's a lot of love for Peyton Manning out there.
Yep.
But I feel like he's just a guy who doesn't get it done when it needs to get done.
Ooh, he does have infinitely more Super Bowls than the Seahawks, if you look at percentages.
Yeah, but whatever. I'm not saying the Seahawks are perennially a dominant team.
It is a bit of his MO, though. I mean, that's kind of the Peyton Manning thing, is you love him,
chunker.
and then
he's the height of 90s fashion.
Excellent. So this game is in Denver, which I think is also interesting. But I think in 2 weeks, the one at the Chiefs, I think the Chiefs could take home field advantage in that game. So anyway,
I think that they should take home field advantage on a game that's played on their home field.
That's what I'm saying. All right, now let's let's go out to Boston. We got one more call here.
Hey, Arrogance, it's John from Boston. This is probably going to be one of the more regrettable drunk dials I ever give. It is 3 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday, and I am out because of a date with some girl turned into a club night on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Fucking Boston,
man.
I was just listening to episode 38 where you guys referenced PAX East. Triggered Boston in my mind. Decided to ring y'all up, give you a call. So stay off my bed.
Stay off my back,
John. Oh, look at this. John called us one more time. Apparently drunk dialing is really big in Boston. So,
hey, guys. It's John from Boston again. Follow up from Val at 3 o'clock a.m. on Tuesday. You guys were just talking about how tiny Jesse is. He could squeeze up into an airplane compartment. Yet, all the time Eric talks about how he's huge and good at sports and all that nonsense. How tall exactly are the two of you and all that? So get off my macaroni and cheese.
Get off my macaroni and cheese, John. This is interesting. You know, a lot of people think that I'm a huge fat guy. And while
you are huge.
While I do weigh 215 pounds, I spread that out over 6'4" of body, so.
Right. You're at once huge and lanky.
Yeah, huge and lanky. That's actually the name of my new country band.
You have kind of an orangutan physique.
Oh, no, dude, that's your dad.
Well, he has orangutan features.
I like it. Yeah, I would say I'm a orangutan. How tall are you, Jesse?
I'm 5'11" and also 1/2".
Well, there you go.
I'm not 6 foot. I'm just shy. I weighed myself today, actually. Mm-hmm. Coming in, clocking in at 170, which is an all-time high for me.
Nicely done.
Got my daddy weight going.
You realize I will never weigh 170 pounds again.
You shouldn't. You would be in trouble.
I for the longest time, like, I've been over 6'2" since I was 14 years old.
Wow.
And there was a time in my life when I was 6'2", 145.
Oh, my God.
That was when I was in junior high. Anyway. So heights and weights, people. Interesting.
There you go.
Interesting stuff, right?
I wonder what your wingspan is. What's your catch radius?
Well, it's generally like how tall you are. I know it varies a bit, but I have your wingspan is usually about how tall you are.
That's weird.
give or take a few inches.
Oh, that's that whole Da Vinci deal.
Yeah.
It makes sense now.
And then I also, before we wrap...
He was just mapping out catch radius.
There you go. And drawing a wing. And that was actually his intern. He was mad at him that day, so he added a wing to it, and that's history. And then finally, before we wrap up, listener feedback. Priscilla Torres said it's a great illustration of the Washington Redskin potatoes.
Yeah.
Frankly, I like the helmet.
Yeah, I like it too.
All right. Well, let's move on to...
They should relocate to Idaho.
Yeah, why not? Or how about Washington? They don't even have to change the name of the city. When I was a little kid, I used to actually think that the Washington Redskins played in Washington.
Where do they play?
They play in Washington, D.C.
Oh. Okay. I thought that maybe they played in, like, a suburb or something.
Oh, and they probably play in Virginia or something like that. I don't know. Okay. RFK Stadium, man. Anyway, let's move on to our little Tiny Matt roll-off. We're each going to roll 20-sided dice, see who gets to speak first on the podcast this week. And here we go. What do you got, dude?
I got a whopping 5.
Ooh, I got a whopping 9.
59. 9-to-5 job right there.
All right. Well, so I'm going to start off this week with actually our loyal listener from Denver. He let this cat out of the bag. But Disney and Marvel have made a huge announcement in partnership with Netflix that there's basically going to be a Hell's Kitchen series of TV shows followed by a mini series around Marvel's Defenders.
What do you mean Hell's Kitchen?
So Hell's Kitchen, it's one of the good things that I like about Marvel.
Like the Gordon Ramsay show?
Yeah, exactly. Gordon Ramsay should be on this show. Actually.
I would be way, way more excited if Gordon Ramsay was somehow involved.
You can play Matt Murdock, the Daredevil. One of the things that I like about Marvel, as opposed to DC, is like Marvel is kind of your, you know, for the layman comic book fan, Marvel is basically a little bit more real world than DC. In a lot of ways. So, like, a lot of their guys are based on science. Like, you know, Wolverine is a scientific experiment. You got, you know, of course, Tony Stark. You've got, you know, Ant-Man is a scientist. The Hulk is a scientist. Science project gone wrong. Spider-Man got bit by a radioactive spider and became Spider-Man.
Got bit by a radioactive scientist.
Right, exactly.
Curie bit him.
Yeah. You know, whereas DC, you have basically like Wonder Woman, who's an Athenian goddess. You have...
Right, there's lots of gods in DC.
Yeah, and you basically... You got Thor in Marvel, but... Yeah, I mean, you got Aquaman's basically a god. Superman's an alien god. Like, they're just all gods in DC.
Batman's a god among men.
Yeah, exactly. The other part about it is that DC has all these fictional cities, Metropolis, Gotham City, whereas Marvel sets all their stuff in the actual real world for the most part. So, you know, New York City is basically the headquarters of all of the Marvel stuff, or most of it. And Hell's Kitchen is a specific part of New York. And
owned entirely by Gordon Ramsay.
Exactly. It's one giant theme restaurant. And...
I would live there.
There's a lot of yelling. And and so that's where Daredevil is from. Matt Murdock is Daredevil. And, you know, everybody knows and loves the movie that was released with Matt Damon. Ben Affleck as Daredevil. Mm-hmm. And Colin Farrell as Bullseye. And Jennifer Garner
Ben
is...
Ben Affleck spans the multiverses here.
He does. He totally does.
He's the common thread between Marvel and DC.
Mm-hmm. And in a lot of ways, you know, Daredevil is kind of described as a Batman-esque character in the Marvel universe because he doesn't have, like, a ton of, you know, superpowers. He's a blind guy, and he has, like, supersonic, like, he basically has echolocation. And he's also
like a
really
bat.
Yeah, and he's like a bat, and he's also really good at flying. Now Murdoch is
like a bat.
Yeah,
Daredevil's more like a bat than Batman is.
He actually totally is. He's way more, and he has like the little horns on his head.
Yeah,
and but Murdoch is a lawyer, whereas Bruce Wayne is obviously an heir to a giant throne. Anyway, so
you're saying Matt Murdoch is a blood sucking vermin, a little much like a bat, am I right?
No, no. Okay. Anyway. So, so Daredevil's kind of the centerpiece to that, but also, so basically what Netflix and ABC and Disney announced was that you're going to have a 13-episode run for Daredevil. You're going to have a 13-episode run for Luke Cage, who's, you know, similarly a guy, you know, from
the
streets.
The guy from Mortal Kombat?
Not that Luke Cage. I think, do they have the same name?
It's Johnny Cage.
Johnny Cage, that's right. So Luke Cage is not. Luke Cage is basically this dude, I think he was originally from Harlem, but he was one of the original African-American superheroes. And a lot like Wolverine, he's pervious. He's got super strength, he's got accelerated healing, but then he's also just a street fighter, and he's awesome. And then you have Jessica Jones, who actually marries Luke Cage. Spoiler alert. She's going to get her own 13-episode series. She's got flight and superhuman strength. She's just like kind of your cool superhero. And then you have Iron Fist, who's basically your kung fu master. He can concentrate. He's got a superhero-esque chi, basically, that he can... He's got, like, a super accelerated chi that he can use for his super martial art skills. He also has got some healing ability and stuff like that. So, these are definitely lesser-known Marvel characters, but basically, they're going to do a 13-episode run for each of these four characters, and then they're going to do a mini-series event with all four of them as the Defenders. And the Defenders are basically, like, a de facto Avengers. Like... The Defenders are kind of like every...
The Defenders is a really shitty name.
It's really dumb. I mean, it kind of takes out... Like, the Avengers is like proactive, whereas the Defenders is kind of passive.
It's definitely reactive.
Yeah, totally reactive. Avengers is like, boom, boom, in your face. The Defenders are like, all right, we'll hold the line.
I hope at one point they're like, guys, the best defense is a good offense.
But
that's when they get... active.
Exactly.
So clear up their skin.
But there's crossover between the Defenders and the Avengers in the comics. Ant-Man's been a Defender. The Hulk has been a Defender. Your favorite guy, the Submariner, has been a Defender. Submariner. Silver Surfer's been a Defender. Basically, it's a ton of Defenders. So I don't know. They're trying to cash in. They're trying to do like kind of a mini Avengers. And the thing that I like about this is that I think they're kind of breaking new ground here in the way that a show can be made. Instead of using the Marvel model of making four movies and then making a team-up film, they're making four TV series and then making a team-up miniseries.
Wow. That's real bold thinking.
Well,
it's just doing the same thing, but with episodics.
It is. It's doing it, but that's where the groundbreaking part comes, because a TV network would never be able to do this. Like, you can't commit to four series and a mini series.
That would be really funny.
Right?
Coming up next is our 2-hour blog.
an entity like Netflix can do that. Like, Netflix is kind of changing the game. It's like, yes, we can commit to four individual series and a mini series, and we'll put them all out at the same time, and then people will binge watch the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, no, it's a lot smarter, mm-hmm. and I think the episodic structure lends itself better to comic books, because comic books mm-hmm. are short and they're right. episodic.
Yeah, and also I like the idea of taking advantage of this universe. I know that the DC and the Marvel universes are expansive universes. There is so much to draw on.
As one, we can just refer to them as the Affleck verse.
Exactly. I like that.
It doesn't really roll off the tongue.
The Affleck verse?
Affleck verse?
I think it sounds good.
Okay.
But yeah, there's so much to draw on, and like, yes, we're already kind of scraping the barrel in the movies, because who would have ever thought there'd be two Thor movies? Like, 10 years ago, they're like, yeah, there's actually going to be two Thor movies, and the villain from the Thor movie is going to be the villain in the Avengers.
God, I'm so bored. This stinks, dude. I have two bold predictions right now.
Mm-hmm.
This Sunday, on Sunday Night Football, will spell the decline and fall of the Peyton Manning empire. 1-2 Superheroes are the new zombies. 10 years
wow.
ago, we were doing zombies or pirates. We're like all played out on pirate stuff, all played out on zombie stuff. Yeah. And I think they're just overplaying their hand with all this fucking superhero stuff.
Well, I think so. I went and saw Thor: The Dark World this past weekend, and
see, you are an enabler.
I am an enabler, and I'm especially an enabler with Thor because
what did you think about
Thor?
Is
my favorite Avenger.
Movie.
I quite enjoyed it, honestly. Like, I thought, I don't know. I've really kind of gotten over giving negative reviews to stuff.
I have too.
It's like, and I'm not saying that I'm not, like, I would just, like, kind of tacitly be like, I don't want to talk about it if I didn't like this movie. But I actually really enjoyed this movie, and I really like Thor. I like Loki. Like, Loki is the most compelling villain in the Marvel Cinematic Universe right now. And I like that it's, like, Lord of the Rings. There's a lot of, like, Lord of the Rings fantasy element to it, which I really enjoy.
I think what they need to do, they need to put out a movie that's, like, the encyclopedia of everything that's going on.
Right.
So you can understand... When you watch the movies, and you can be like, these are this guy's weaknesses, and this is how, if you wanted to kill Thor, you could. It's not impossible. You just have to do this. And this is the parameters of all their superpowers.
They actually had a part in this where, like, because Loki's like, you know, we're gods. We shouldn't be meddling with humans. And Odin was like, we're not gods. We live and die. Like, we just happen to do it over millennials.
But, like, can you shoot him with a gun and he dies?
I think so. If you shot Thor in the head with a gun, I bet you he'd die.
Okay.
Yeah, I really think he would.
I don't know this stuff.
He can get his, like, limbs cut off.
Yeah? But, like, when he got stabbed in the Avengers movie, it was, like, no big deal.
Well, he got stabbed. Like I said, you gotta shoot him in the head. You gotta go for the kill shot with Thor.
So they are like zombies. You just have to shoot them all in the head.
Exactly. Oh, man. Oh, man. But yeah, I mean, Steve Rogers is the same way. Like, you could, if you shot Steve Rogers in the head, he'd go down. Even though he's a super soldier, he's still a human.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think the only guy that I can think of, I mean, is Superman, obviously, and then Wolverine.
But I don't know. I think they play too fast and loose with this stuff. It's like,
yeah.
Well, Thor, you know, he, like, used his zapping power to zap Iron Man, and oh, it made Iron Man 3 times more powerful. It's like...
Well, that's just comic books, man. Like, I think that's the other part about this is that, you know, comic books are fun, and comic books are really written for kids. And, like, I know that kids grow up and they still want to read comic books, and you can have adult-themed comic books, and that's totally fine. I'm not discounting that by any means, but, like... The fact of the matter is comic books are written for 14-year-olds. And, like, it's you comic books are tailored toward a demographic that's like, yeah, okay, so Thor zaps Tony Stark with his lightning, and Tony Stark gets 4 times more powerful. That totally makes sense to me because I'm 14 years old and I want Tony Stark to punch somebody in the face and make it awesome.
Yeah.
Like, and
that's,
just...
That's fair.
And just... Let that be. Like,
but I don't need 4 miniseries at once of this stuff.
I think I'm going to watch the hell out of this.
And there's like 8 superhero movies a year.
Yeah, there's 4. There's usually
there's
like
too
4.
Many.
Yeah, probably. and then we got Star Wars coming back too, so. Yeah, but the other thing that I really like about Thor is that you know, Thor is basically just like the Norse god. Like, I know that they have like an outer space element to it to a certain extent, but like, it's like Thor is just the Norse Thor, like, and that's it. Like, he's just a Norse god, and he happens to exist in the same universe with superheroes who are scientifically making themselves awesome, but he's just...
So it's a super creative storytelling elements and character building employed when they decided to make him a character.
Well, I mean, the thing about Thor is that he, you know, I don't know exactly when he came in, but I'm sure it was like around the time of like Wonder Woman, or like Aquaman coming into like the fold, and Marvel was like, okay, we need one of these gods to be in here because they're public domain and we can basically pick whichever one we want. Oh, they haven't done Norse yet. Let's go with Thor. And then that was it.
Yeah, it's a little lazy.
It's a little lazy, but whatever, dude. I like Thor. He's my favorite one because he's Scandinavian and he's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Just like you, my friend.
That's what I'm saying. So, anyway, I'm going to binge watch the hell out of this. I actually think it's really cool. I'm excited to see Netflix do this with maybe some stuff outside of the Marvel Cinematic Universe or superhero realm. Imagine if you have a show like The Walking Dead, and instead of doing a spinoff like Better Call Saul, you do four 13-episode arcs centering on different characters. So Saul has a 13-episode arc, and then Huel has a 13-episode arc, and then Skinny Pete has a 13-episode arc. And then they can come together for a miniseries event, and something cool will happen. I don't know.
Yeah, it's great, but man... See, that's too much stuff. I just can't, man, this is so much stuff. I find it crazy. It's like, okay, a movie, 2 hours. Okay, mm-hmm. Great. We're going to make this movie. It's going to take you 2 hours to watch all of it. And then we're going to make this 14-part miniseries, and each episode is an hour long. So yeah. We're just going to make a 14-hour-long movie.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. I'm for it personally, but I think you're going into a minimalist phase, Jesse.
Yeah, I'm just busy.
You're a minimalist, busy contrarian, and that's why I love you.
Put that on my tombstone.
Put that on your business card.
Minimalist, busy contrarian, and then in a different font? No, I'm not.
I think that's too many words since you're so busy. It's just be nope.
Nah. Not really.
Nah.
Nuh-uh.
All right, buddy. Well, speaking of contrarian, what's going to be your rebuttal to my first topic?
Well, this is one of our geekier episodes.
Love it.
Because I want to talk about some video games.
Yeah.
Here we go.
So, gamers should not expect the virtual reality headset Oculus Rift to come to Xbox One or PlayStation 4 anytime soon. It's not gonna happen, gamers.
was that last part in the headline?
No, that was all me.
That was the busy contrarian, if I've ever heard him.
So, creator Palmer Luckey told TechRadar that consoles in general are, quote, too limited for what Oculus VR has planned. So, why don't you give a quick nerd to know on the Oculus Rift, since you're the one on the podcast who's experienced it firsthand.
I have experienced it firsthand. So, Oculus Rift, it came out, I want to say 2 years ago now, maybe a year and a half ago. They did a Kickstarter for it. For the dev kits, but basically it's like a pair of ski goggles, and you put it on, and it's a 3D virtual reality headset. And the thing that sets it apart from, like, say, the Virtual Boy of the mid-90s is that as you move your head, it one-to-one moves you around in the environment. So if you turn your head left, it's literally like turning your head left in the real world.
It's basically what we all wanted when we were playing, like, Doom in elementary school and talking about how cool it would be.
Yeah, or like when you're watching First Kid, you know, with Sinbad, and and then the First Kid goes to the mall and gets in the virtual reality game, and then the guys are trying to kill him, and then Sinbad finds him. What a good movie.
First Kid or Blank Check, which is the better?
I'm a First Kid guy.
See, I'm a Blank Check guy.
I thought First Kid was really good.
So I looked up this guy, Palmer Luckey.
Uh-huh.
He's 21 years old, Eric.
Palmer Luckey?
The creator of Oculus Rift is 21 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yikes.
I want Palmer Luckey and Andrew Luck to do a podcast called Luck and Lucky.
Got
where
it.
Where they talk about how great it is to be young and rich.
That's awesome. So anyway, they have the Oculus Rift. It's a 3D headset, but now they have the Oculus Rift HD, which I got to try out at PAX, which was eerie, dude. Because you put it on, and I'm sure that like everybody will have one of these in like a couple years, and it won't be as weird. But like you put it on, and I was in a race car sim, and so your hands are on the steering wheel in the race car sim, but my arms are at my sides, and my brain had a really hard time understanding which were my arms. were my arms in the car, or were my arms at my sides? It was like this weird thing of like my arms almost became non-existent because they were replaced with the arms in the game.
That's crazy. I was listening to this podcast, and again, it's on the Joe Rogan. It was the Joe Rogan podcast, so take everything with a grain of salt because everyone's a psycho on that podcast. He's talking to these transhumanists, which they're like DIY cyborg dudes.
Okay.
And they install these tiny magnets in their fingers. And it allows you to like feel when there's like an electromagnetic field nearby.
Okay.
And you just like sense it because your neuroplasticity builds like new neural pathways between what's happening and what you're feeling. So like literally you just feel when there's like electromagnetic fields around you. And it's like a tingling, bubbly kind of feeling in your fingers.
Yikes. It's nuts.
But anyway, maybe you could implement that, and then you know where your arms are.
Hopefully. Something
so,
like that.
So, Lucky said, consoles are too limited for what we want to do. We're trying to make the best virtual reality device in the world. We want to continue to innovate and upgrade every year. Continue making progress internally, and whenever we make big jumps, we want to push that to the public. So basically, what's happened is he's looked at this 8-year life cycle of the last console generation and was like, no, we don't want to have to wait 8 years before there's new hardware that we can implement the next iteration of Oculus Rift. So it sounds like, I don't know if it'll ever come to the console.
Well, the question here is, I mean, yes, this is the 8-year life cycle of the PS4 and the Xbox 360, but they did upgrade each of those systems halfway through their life cycle.
Yeah, that's true.
And the other part about this is, you know, a lot of people are saying, is this the last console generation? Is the Xbox One and the PS4 the last console generation?
Why would it be?
Because, well, there's a couple of trains of thoughts here. First of all is that everybody's going to move to more, like, why would you need a console if you can get a similar experience that is, if you get a similar experience that is as easy to use in a downloadable PC platform? I mean, I think the way of the disc game is going to be gone in like 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, but I think there'll still be consoles. Well, in the fact that a console is, you'll still be able to download everything. It'll be cloud storage and stuff, and there won't be discs, but it'll just be a little easy computer for you to.
Yeah, so I think that those little easy computers will be different than the console generations we see today. Like, people are predicting that the Xbox and the PlayStation, this could be the last iteration of them.
I doubt that very much.
Okay. It's all just speculation. I heard on the Joe Rogan podcast, so.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
So, they're saying Oculus Rift, not planned for consoles, but apparently Microsoft and Sony are both working on their own virtual reality headsets for their respective equipment. I hadn't known that.
Actually, Sony rolled out their VR headset at a recent Tokyo Tech show, and it had the price tag of over $1,000.
Oh, nice.
And that's one of the things about the Oculus Rift is they haven't priced out the HD ones yet.
$1,999.
But
Billy Mays said $1,999. Mm-hmm. But don't wait, there's more. I also get a slap chop.
Oh man, yeah. That comes with your ShamWow.
Don't try to operate the slap chop while operating the Oculus Rift.
Yeah, the
that is dangerous.
The slap chop peripheral is really dangerous, guys. We like the Oculus Rift, but the slap chop peripheral is really bad.
In fact, the Oculus Rift won't fire up until you have the safety device installed on the slap chop.
Exactly.
They're Bluetooth linked, so they know.
So they haven't priced out the HD Oculus Rifts yet, but the dev kit one that was released on Kickstarter was only $300, which is basically the price of like a high quality monitor. Right. So I mean,
man, so why is the PlayStation one so cool that it's so damn expensive?
I think because it's first of all, there's nothing to use it on yet. I mean, it would basically be you need to make your own firmware for it. And then, second of all, they're just trying to get something on the market, dude. I don't know. Make and you know, Oculus Rift, if they can make a consumer price product that is that cool. I mean, I definitely want a Rift. After wearing one, I want one so bad.
Yeah.
They're sweet.
It'd be so stupid for me to buy one. I'd just be playing retro games on it, like FTL but or XCOM, the original XCOM.
But somebody mods those games so that they work with the peripheral. I mean, that'd be cool. Like, first-person Mario.
Yeah.
It's
scary. I don't know if I need that.
Probably not. But, you know, I do think that this Steam Machine revolution is pretty cool. I mean, that Steam controller is really cool. And I bet you that the Oculus Rift will work with the Steam Machines. So,
speaking of controllers,
mm-hmm.
you know how the Xbox 360 wired controllers?
Uh-huh.
It's like a wire that plugs into a tiny wire that plugs into your Xbox.
Right.
Mine went missing.
Mm-hmm.
I blame Russell Nisha. So I'm thinking about buying a new controller. I'm wondering if I should buy a PlayStation 3 controller or if I should hold off for the Steam controller. Because I have no idea when that could be.
Yeah, I mean, I would get a PS4 controller. The DualShock,
that's what I meant.
Yeah,
that's
those are available now. And
they're supposed to be pretty legit.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying they're the best controller that's ever been made. However, I'm guessing that those people are PlayStation people, because the one thing that the PlayStation controllers have always, I just don't like the thumbsticks. They're too loosey goosey.
Yeah, they kind of stink.
They're really bad thumbsticks. But apparently, the DualShock. Are we turning into Blue Yonder right now?
Oh, move on.
Oh,
go to
man.
Break. Go to break.
Let's go to break, guys. All right, it's time for some trivia. We're just going to do Genus 1, a Trivial Pursuit, like we do each and every week. I'm going to roll a six-sided die to see which category we're doing now. And, ooh, 5, Science and Nature.
All right.
This is geeky. All right, Jesse, this question's for you. Please.
My second topic doesn't get any better either.
Yeah.
Just warning you.
Mine might be marginally a little more mainstream, but not much more. Okay, Jesse, this question is for you. Please play along at home. What fraction? Oh, man, puberty is awesome, guys. I just want to say puberty is legitimate. that sounded really weird. That's a strange sound bite. Okay. What fraction of an iceberg shows above the water?
I will say 1/100th.
I'm going to say 1/10th. 1/9th? Are you joking? Are you joking? 1/9th. So get out of here with this 1/9th. 1/9th.
Type of some of these Trivial Pursuit questions aren't about like, can you actually answer this? It's more like, now you know.
Exactly. That is just one that like they're like, well, fuck these guys. The guys were writing all these questions. They're like, fuck these guys. 1/9th. All right, this question's for me. What's the common name of the vegetable Beta vulgaris? Beta vulgaris. I'm going to go with a beet.
I'll say a carrot because I like beta carotene.
A beetroot.
Technically, that's incorrect.
What the hell?
I'm kidding. You take it.
That's a beet, right?
Yeah,
And a beetroot are the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like
it's the same plan for sure.
The Trivial Pursuit guys are really trying to just mess with us at this point. We found their ruse.
30 years later, we got them, boys.
All right. Jesse, this question's for you. Please play along at home. What is the term for an organism that lives on or in another?
A parasite?
There you go. You got it, parasite. On or in? All right, Jesse. I need this one for the win. This question's for me. Which is larger, the U.S. Oh, that we will definitely have a winner on this question. Which is larger, the U.S. or British fluid ounce? The U.S. or British fluid ounce is for me. I'm going to go, everything's bigger in Texas, baby. I'm going U.S. on this one.
Guess I'm a British man.
All right. And the answer
is?
I'm
right.
No, the answer is the U.S., baby.
Oh.
Of course ours is bigger. We're the U.S., man.
Oh, yeah, but like, they have like the Imperial Pint.
That's true.
Like 20 ounces instead of 16.
The metric ton.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do, man? The nautical mile?
Imperial knots.
Exactly. All right. Well, for my second topic, I don't think this really fits into any category. It's actually something I read on Facebook.
Tusked whales, narwhals, the unicorns of the sea.
Status updates.
Extra, extra. Reddit.
Facebook.
Reddit.
Pokemon.
Facebook.
That's the way it is.
Did you say Pokemon?
It said poke it on.
Poke it on. Pokedon was the worst Pokemon knockoff. All right. So I read this.
Or the best, depending.
Depending.
On your perspective. Depending on who got poked.
So this is something that was in Tufts Magazine from Tufts University. Actually, a really interesting article. You know, we've talked about this before, about how the United States of America is really kind of is becoming so crazily different depending on where you are in the country. Like, we are becoming such a polarized society that, like, if you are smoking marijuana on a park bench in Boulder, Colorado, people probably aren't going to mess with you. If you do the same thing in Las Vegas, it is a felony and you will go to prison.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I feel like the United States is pretty homogenous.
I feel...
There's an IKEA everywhere.
There is an IKEA everywhere. But this is pervasive culture.
We've got the same stores everywhere.
Yeah, the stores are one thing, but the cultural difference is pretty different. I mean, if you're living in Seattle, Washington, you're basically living in a different country than Birmingham, Alabama. Ugh,
dude, I think if you go to like 1860, it's radically different between Seattle, Washington and Birmingham, Alabama.
I don't know about that.
I think we're more homogenous than ever as Americans.
I don't know if I would agree with that. But, I mean, I think that part of this is the wealth gap. I mean, if you are in Birmingham, Alabama, and you're in Seattle, Washington, in 1860, the wealth gap is a lot smaller than it is now. I think that that does have an impact on it.
I don't know, but at the same time, you have, like, Andrew Carnegie.
Right.
I mean, there was a huge wealth gap back then.
Yes, but it wasn't, yeah.
Let's stick in Birmingham, and let's go to 1840. You're a plantation owner, or you're a slave, and you live in the same right. property.
Yes, that is obviously, that's obviously.
That's a pretty significant wealth
gap. It is
a
significant, but I'm talking about geographical differences. And if in that time, I mean, literally the North and South were so different that the South decided to become their own country.
Right. You're proving my point that now we are much more homogenous than we were.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I honestly don't necessarily agree with that. I think that
anyway,
there are certain places that are
Let's see if the article can clear things up.
Well, no. So this article basically kind of takes that argument, especially from a religious front, too. And basically looks at it from the perspective of when the 13 colonies were established, during the 16th, 1700s. I guess it was probably all in the 1700s, wasn't it? Maybe some in the 60s. Yeah, like Georgetown. Anyway. But when the 13 colonies were established, they were mostly established based on religious differences. And you can actually still see this till today. Places like, if you look at the Ivy League colleges, it kind of tells you what the reigning denomination in those areas were. So you had like the Quakers are in Pennsylvania, and then you had like the Presbyterians found in New Jersey. And, there was a writer here from Tufts University who basically decided to take a look at the way that the U.S. is split up right now from a ideological perspective and basically divide the country up into a series of countries, which I think is pretty interesting.
Based on religion?
Based on religion, but also just based on, like, basic ideology.
Ah.
So these are the American nations today, and the person who wrote this article was Colin Woodard. So, first of all, there's Yankeedom. Yankeedom stretches from...
Worst name for a country ever.
Yeah, these could definitely get some better country names, but Yankeedom is basically...
How about Metsdom?
Love it. So it's New England, and then it kind of wraps around Lake Erie into Michigan, and then incorporates also Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Love it.
Yep. Yankeedom has, since its outset, put a great emphasis on perfecting earthly civilization through social engineering, denial of self for the common good, and assimilation of outsiders. Its prized education, intellectual achievement, the common good... intellectual communal empowerment and broad citizen participation in politics and government. So,
I don't know, man. I've seen some of the fatties at the Green Bay games. I don't think they're depriving themselves of anything.
Well, I don't know about Wisconsin about this, because you have like the whole who's the governor of Wisconsin?
Big Cheese.
Yeah, the Big Cheese. Then you have New Netherland, and New Netherland is basically just New York City. New Netherland has always been global commercial culture, materialistic with profound tolerance for ethnic and religious diversity, and an unflinching commitment to the freedom of inquiry and conscience. So that's New York for you. Then you have
giant race gang wars in New York?
I don't think so. I mean,
was Gangs of New York entirely made up? I actually don't know.
No, the Gangs of New York was, but you do realize Gangs of New York was set in like the 1800s during Tammany Hall. This is all based on current stuff.
Oh.
This is all current.
Okay, got you.
So this is as if the colonies were established today.
Okay, got you.
So then you have the Midlands.
Yeah, Lady Gaga lives there, so.
Mm-hmm. Then you have...
Pretty legit place.
Then you have the Midlands. So the Midlands is kind of this, like, cut through the Rust Belt. So it includes places like northern Indiana, northern Ohio, northern Illinois... and then stretches into parts of like northern Missouri and eastern Nebraska, but basically kind of this thin strip that cuts through the Rust Belt. The Midlands, America's great swing region, was founded by English Quakers who believed in humans' inherent goodness and welcomed people to many nations and creeds of their own utopian colonies like Pennsylvania and the shores of Delaware Bay. So basically this is the Rust Belt. It kind of incorporates Philadelphia in there. Up next, we got Tidewater, and basically Tidewater is the coasts of Virginia and North Carolina and around the Chesapeake Bay there. The Chesapeake. Built by the younger sons of southern English gentry in the Chesapeake country, the neighboring sections of Delaware and North Carolina, Tidewater is meant to reproduce the semi-feudal society of the countryside they'd left behind. Standing in for peasantry were indentured servants, later slaves. Tidewater places high value on respect for authority and tradition and very little on equality or public participation in politics. It was the most powerful of the American nations in the 18th century, but today it is in decline partly because it was cut off from westward expansion by boisterous Appalachian neighbors and more recently because it has been eaten away by the expanding federal halos around D.C. and Norfolk. It's really interesting. It kind of incorporates the full history of the region.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go through a few of these other ones. We got Greater Appalachia, which is basically everything from North Texas to Tennessee to Southern Indiana to Kentucky to Eastern North Carolina to Northern Alabama. Basically,
what I like to call the dead weight states.
These are the Jacksonian states, man. This is the land of Jackson. Mm-hmm. And then right below that, you got the Deep South. Which basically is, you know, the South. You got Alabama, Mississippi. You got Northern Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and that's your Deep South. Established by English slaves, lords from Barbados, Deep South was meant as a West Indies style slave society. This nation offered a version of classical republicanism modeled on the slave states of the ancient world, where democracy was the privilege of the few and enslavement of the natural Lot of the Many. In caste systems smashed by outside intervention, it continues to fight against expanded federal powers, taxes on capital and the wealthy, and environmental, labor, and consumer regulations. This is your Bible Belt, basically. Then we have El Norte, which is basically northern Mexico into southern California, southern Arizona, southern Texas, and southern New Mexico. You have the Left Coast, which is awesome.
Creative stuff there, guys. Yeah.
The Left Coast is northern California all the way up to Juneau, Alaska, and stopping at the Cascade Mountains. What else we got?
So it's your Cascadia.
Exactly, it's Cascadia. Then we got New France, which is basically just the Delta. You have the Far West, which is the flyover states. New France also includes Quebec, so it's a split territory. And then you have part of the Spanish Caribbean, the southern tip of Florida. So basically it takes a look at kind of the 13 colonies. If we hadn't all assimilated together into a single nation, what might we look like today? It's really an interesting read, and I think that it really does kind of show these crazy differences that you find in this country. And, you know, Jesse, I understand that what you're saying when you say that we may all be different, but we're still Americans. There's definitely truth in that, but I think that there are some crazy differences between regions in the United States. It's just a huge freaking country, man.
Yeah, it's a gigantic, ginormous country.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, like, how homogenous is, like, your Russia or your China?
Yeah.
Like, are the differences between regions there more or less than the difference between, like, a Washington and a, we keep going back to Alabama.
Right. Well, and the interesting thing about it as well is that
Alabama, the opposite of Washington.
Washington, the opposite of Alabama.
Take that for what is. Take that how you will.
The other part of that is I would venture to guess that. I mean, I don't even know about the post-Soviet republics and how they all got split up after the Berlin Wall fell, but I would assume that you have to look at a geographical space. So obviously, there's much more of China that is inhabitable than there is of a country like Russia, and you look at a country like Canada. Second largest country in the world by geographic area. However, 90% of the inhabitants live within a couple hundred miles of the border. So it's like everybody's crammed down in one geographic region, which kind of assimilates.
Plotting.
Exactly.
Biding their time.
Which I think might assimilate the culture a little more. I don't know if there are vast cultural differences between Manitoba and British Columbia.
I think so, because, you have French-speaking separatists on one coast. And...
But I think Quebec is kind of its own deal.
Man, I really need to do a tour of Canada.
Dude, Montreal sounds awesome. Everybody says Montreal is the best.
I want to go to Newfoundland. Apparently it's just wacky over there.
Dude, Newfoundland is kind of, the weather's horrific.
Yeah, well, it's not great here in Washington.
You'll say that now.
And I don't want to live there, I just want to visit.
Yeah, I would actually, I want to go to Labrador. See what's happening there, Prince Edward Island.
What is that?
Labrador, man. Prince Edward Island and Labrador. Where do you think Labrador retrievers come from, man?
I don't know. Space?
It's all
they told me space on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Basically.
They said Sasquatch ate a bunch of magic mushrooms and then telepathically communicated with aliens and they gave us Labradors.
Basically, Canada was like, all right, every province is going to be fucking huge except for these little islands. These tiny islands are their own province. Okay?
It's funny.
Back off the little islands. You have your giant
Manifest,
province.
Manifest Destiny is lazy.
It's super lazy.
You have New England, or they're all crammed in there. And then the further and further west you go, they get bigger and bigger. And then you get your Texas, bam, right. California, huge. And then you top it all off with Alaska. Just fucking all Alaska, one giant thing. Like, we can't be bothered to separate this up.
Just all of it.
One state.
Yeah. I'm kind of surprised Hawaii isn't just part of Alaska.
Me too.
They should just extend the archipelago. Where are you going? Alaska. Which part? The sunny part. Man, oh, I hear it's really nice.
Feast or famine in Alaska.
Exactly. All right, J-Dog, what's your second topo?
So for my second topo, I want to talk about science.
Yep. Here it is.
If today we're able to create a two-headed dog with six legs, is it possible that a similar creature existed thousands of years ago? And I say yes.
Great Scott!
Great Scott.
Sorry, that sound bite just cracks me up every time.
I love it. It's
what the hell is he talking about?
It's completely logical and everyone knows it.
Can we make a two-headed dog with six?
I don't know.
That's the whole premise of his argument.
I know, the assumption is so wonderful. Like, of course.
Oh,
if
God.
Today, and I say yes.
So, I couldn't find one science topic that was worthy of its own discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to do the lightning round.
Let's do it, man.
We'll run through some headlines here.
I call it the Thor round.
I bet, to be super scientific. So 8.8 billion planets could potentially support life in our galaxy.
In the galaxy.
According to USNews.com, scientists used data from 42,000 stars that NASA's Kepler spacecraft observed to estimate the existence of billions of Earth-like planets with inhabitable or Goldilocks zones.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's where it's close enough to a sun. It's got a good size, and it could support liquid life, meaning water,
right,
and so on. So
I always hate that term, by the way, the Goldilocks zone.
I love it.
Why?
Because Venus is too goddamn hot, and Mars is too cold.
Yes, but you know what happened to Goldilocks at the end of Goldilocks? She got 86 by the bears. They showed up, and then they were like, you need to get out of our zone.
You know, so basically, it's all a metaphor for how we need to leave Earth.
I think it's more of a metaphor for if we try to go to another planet, we're going to get kicked off by who's ever there.
By bears.
But like Avatar.
We have to go with swords and guns.
Swords and guns and goats.
So of those 42,000 stars, 603 had planets orbiting them, though only 10 of those planets appeared to be Earth-like in size. And maybe right now you're like, what? That's not, you said billions. That's only 10.
Right.
But when you do the math and take the sample from those 42,000 stars and apply them to the 20 billion sun-like stars in our galaxy alone, about 1 in 5 stars altogether, which, goddamn, that's a lot of stars.
Goddamn.
There's an estimated 8.8 billion planets that could potentially support life. And in our galaxy.
And apparently the closest one is only 12 light years away, I believe.
Yeah, that's like nothing.
It's if we've mastered the speed of light, you could conceivably do that.
Yeah, very easily.
I mean, all we got to do is master the speed of light.
That's like how long it takes to get your doctorate.
Exactly, dude. Like, I don't even remember. Like, if you asked me to relive the first 12 years of my life, I literally could maybe remember, like, 3 days of it.
That's a good point. We should just put babies on these FTL ships.
Exactly, man.
They don't remember the first 12 years anyway.
Yeah, they'd be good for like the first 5 or 6 even. I feel like I kind of just slipped into an Aaron drawl.
That's a good drawl.
I've been listening to a lot of Breaking Good, so.
Oh, there you go. Yep. Yeah, he has an infectious accent.
Yep.
That Midwest, what would you call it? The Hoosier accent?
The Hoosier drawl?
The Kentucky Colonel.
Yep.
Yeah, Roger Dassey has it as well.
Yeah,
it's
but
not just Indiana, it's Kentucky.
Well, but Indiana and Kentucky are best friends. They're BFFs. They're like little Lego pieces. They click into each other.
That's true.
Yeah.
Speaking of clicking into each other, this is an actual headline. Hyenas Facebook each other with their arses. Fact.
You've been poked.
So, researchers from Michigan State University examined the pongee.
Mm-hmm.
Are we getting into a Geordie dialect here? The pongee bacteria hyenas leave behind whenever they smear their secretions or paste on a tree, plants, or grass stalk. This excretions contain friendly microbes which emit smells which serve as messages for other hyenas to interpret.
Yep.
Quote, the sour-smelling signals relay realms of information. Wow, this is alliterative. For other animals to read, said Kevin Theus, an MSU postdoctoral researcher. Hyenas can leave a quick, detailed message and go. It's like a bulletin board of who's around and how they're doing. And this is all with their poop glands. They're using their anal glands to do this.
Yeah, we've all been there.
We have this to a certain extent, because if you know someone real well, you can sniff out which one of their farts.
Oh, yeah.
Like, who farted in a room.
I know what your farts smell like.
There's signature farts.
I know what your farts smell like, and I know what my sister's farts smell like.
Really? Levi's are very distinct.
I also feel... I'm glad we're talking about this. I also feel like with my sister's farts, and I know that we're family, but I feel like I'm almost able to mask my fart so that it smells like her fart.
How? Do you, like, clench a certain way?
Or? I don't know, man. I just feel like when I'm around my sister and I fart, it kind of smells like her fart.
I wonder if the hyenas, when they leave one of their fart messages, do you think they ever lie?
Oh, yeah. They said it's like Facebook, dude. Like, 90% of the stuff is bullshit. And then the other 10% is ads.
Where, like, on Facebook, you know, it's leading to depression because people only post the good stuff. So
right.
You hear about your peers doing all this great stuff, and then right. You're like, oh, well, why don't I do good stuff? So hyenas are suffering from fart envy out there.
Fart envy, man. It happens.
It's a fact.
Shit happens, man.
Good stuff. So, a rare Asian unicorn was caught on camera in a Vietnam jungle.
Legitimate.
The World Wildlife Fund, or WWF, made an exciting announcement on November 12th. The Saola, one of the most endangered mammals on the planet, was photographed using a remote camera trap in the jungle of Vietnam. The photograph is the first time the animal was imaged in its natural environment in the 21st century.
Yeah, remote camera trap is the name of my EDM band.
I don't know what EDM means.
Electronic dance music, bro!
Sorry. So here's the thing. I was like, Asian unicorn? I gotta check this out.
Yeah.
I looked at some photos of it, and it had two horns.
What?
So, they go on to say, although this Saola resembles an antelope, the animal is actually a cousin of common cattle, called the Asian unicorn because it is so seldom seen.
Aww.
It's identified by two parallel horns with sharp ends, which can reach up to 50 inches in length.
Okay.
So that's a misnomer.
Misleading.
I feel like we need a different name.
Totally. How about the
Asian unicorn?
How about the Asian duo horn?
Yeah, the bicorn.
The bicorn. We're done. Finish it. Not misleading. Here. You can even call it the rare Asian bicorn if you want.
I saved the best for last.
Okay.
It's got all your favorite things.
Got it.
It's got science.
Word.
It's got the DIY attitude.
Got it.
And it's got Scandinavian people.
Excellent.
And it also includes unleashing huge amounts of powerful energy on your foes.
There you go.
In fact, I think we might have a thorn in the making here. A Swedish man arrested on charges of unauthorized possession of nuclear material after trying to split atoms in his kitchen says he was only doing it as a hobby. Richard Hondel said he had the radioactive elements radium, americium, and uranium in his flat in southern Sweden when the police showed up. He said on Wednesday he'd always been interested in physics and chemistry and, quote, just wanted to see if it was possible to split atoms at home. Handel kept a blog about his experiments, describing how he created a small meltdown on his stove. Only later did he realize it might not be legal and sent a question to Sweden's radiation authority, which sent the police. God.
This guy is, like, so Scandinavian. It's ridiculous.
He narked on him. Yeah, exactly. He's like, well, I have an Allen wrench, so I'm pretty qualified.
I love it, dude.
This guy, if convicted, he faces up to 2 years in prison, which I don't think he deserves. Sure, he made a mistake, but he narked himself out.
That's great, but he lives in an apartment. He doesn't live in a house, which means that he potentially exposed all of his neighbors to radiation poisoning.
That's true, yeah. That's kind of a dick move.
Dumb mistake? Maybe. Bad cancer bad for everyone in your apartment complex? I think 2 years fits the crime there.
But, I mean, what's the likelihood he's going to recommit? I think he learned his lesson.
That's true. It would be purely punitive.
I'm sure in Scandinavia, they'll be like, your punishment is you have to attend this doctoral program now.
Right. Exactly.
Radiology.
We have to enroll you in the Nobel Prize Academy.
Yeah, exactly. Sir. It's the same slap on the wrist we gave Obama.
He hasn't showed up for classes yet, though. We're feeling a little snubbed.
Well, it's been busy. Yeah. So that's it. That's my lightning round of science.
Love it, dude. Lightning round. Anyway. Brought to you by Thor. Now in theaters. Thor the Dark World. All right.
I wish we had that ad.
Let's move on to our Facebook roundup. But before we do, we want to talk to you about the Bald Move Network right now. Watching Dead is now up on baldmove.com. Covering all of your Walking Dead stuff. We also
speaking of earlier when you're talking about maybe doing a multi-part story arc about Better Call Saul.
Yep.
You said it was a spinoff of Walking Dead.
Oh no.
Which I got a kick out of. I like Saul in the post-apocalypse.
I actually kind of love that too. I bet you he could like manipulate himself into being some kind of like governor of like a township or something.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. So anyway, we got Watching Dead is now up on baldmove.com. We've also got the Because Show, ladies down in Los Angeles talking about everything that you want ladies in Los Angeles to talk about. And then we also have Up Yours Downstairs, which is all of your Edwardian needs. If it's on PBS and it's from Britain, they're going to talk about it. So get all your TV stuff on baldmove.com, guys. And then if you get in touch with us, you can write us an email, personalergots@gmail.com. You can give us a call and leave us a voicemail at 360-362-0024. You can follow us. We are on the Facebook page of Bald Move. We're also on the Personal Arrogance Facebook page. There's two of them, so like them both. Also, we're on Twitter at Personal Podcast. You can rate and review us on iTunes, and you can tell your friends about us. And there's a lot of ways to spread the word. So we always appreciate getting your listener feedback. And speaking of listener feedback, each week we do the Facebook Roundup, where we ask you to give us some topics to gab about on Facebook, and we gab about them all. Starting off right now with Sean Keefe says, what do you think about the untapped social media network? Jesse, have you heard about this?
I have, and I have it on my iPod Touch deal, but I haven't actually used it yet.
It's interesting.
People say it's cool.
There's a lot of... So John Dominic on here says, I love Untappd. It's a great way to discover new beers and keep tabs on what you drink and how you liked it. People often ask me what I think about a certain beer, and it can be hard to remember sometimes, especially if I sampled it at a festival with a few dozen others. With Untappd, I can quickly and easily retrieve my rating and notes for any particular beer from the database. Untappd also encourages you to diversify your palate by trying different styles and venues through badges. A few casts ago, Sam Golmahamadi asked how to become a craft beer connoisseur. Untappd is a great tool for newbies to learn and enhance the experience for all. Just don't use it for nefarious hipster purposes.
Well, early recommendation from John Dominic.
Yeah. Apparently, Untappd sounds awesome. I kind of want to be a part of this. Up next, we got from Tanner says, Jesse, I saw a picture of you casking a beer at home. Were you casking a beer at home?
Well, it was actually that barrel age I made for my wedding.
Oh, yeah. He says, this is a good alternative to avoid doing a ton of bottling at home. And if you don't want to have the gas set up at home, is it difficult?
My answer is no, it's not a good alternative.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you tap it, you got to drink the whole thing or it goes flat.
Yeah.
And it gets warm, too. So, like, especially don't try and do it in the summer. You can maybe get away with it in the winter. But just do the gas setup at home. It's so nice.
It's real easy, and it tastes great, and it lasts forever. Michael says, thinking of starting an M's podcast, Eric, any advice, any interest in guest hosting, in a guest hosting gig from time to time? I would love to guest host on a Mariners podcast. I can always talk M's baseball. And my advice for anybody out there who's trying to start a podcast is just be consistent, guys. Like, if you're going to release a podcast, you got to do it on a consistent basis or you got to quit.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jesse and I have been doing this podcast for 3.5 years. I think we missed 2 episodes in that whole time. Frame?
Yeah, we've been more or less consistent.
Pretty damn consistent. Every goddamn week we're gabbing in your ears. So just be consistent.
Would be choose a better team to do a podcast.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. John, our good buddy from Boston, says, "What's each of your biggest regrets?" Because I'm really regretting weekday drinking today at work. And John, I think we might have heard your weekday drinking 3 a.m. But yeah, that's always a big regret, is being hungover at work. I did that once and I realized that can't happen anymore. That's like the worst thing in the world.
One of my biggest regrets is not getting a chemistry degree. It was like 51-49 mm-hmm. Between history and chemistry. Went with history. Could have done that. Definitely should have done that chem degree.
Yeah, then you could start cooking the blue stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Ryan says, since GOMRB has been forced into retirement, thoughts of having a brief football segment on Personal Arrogance? I think we kind of do a brief football segment every week.
You know, it might be fun if we did like a post-credits football gab.
A little football
Maybe
gab.
Keep it to like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Football gab. We'll put that one on the burner. James Patterson says, now that you've embraced Borderlands 2, have you played the Assault on Dragon Keep? So much D&D fan service. Also, the Padres AAA team in El Paso, Texas, renamed themselves the Chihuahuas. I think it's great both personally and geographically, both for personality and geography. Thoughts on the name and Chihuahuas in general? Finally, more winter seasonal recos, please. I love Snowcap. Even this year's. Yeah, like I said, Terminal Gravity. Pick that up if you can find it. I love minor league baseball teams because they always have the weirdest names, dude. And I think the Chihuahuas is an awesome name.
Yeah, great name. Not a great dog.
Not a great dog. No. Barely a dog. Barely a dog. Levi.
They should have gone with Chupacabras.
Yeah, Chupacabras would have been sweet, man. Levi Jetty, who's this guy, said I could potentially get a kegerator on the cheap, but I don't know if I can go through a keg fast enough. How long is beer good in a keg, Jesse?
Depends on the beer.
Mm-hmm.
But for a while, you know, 3 months
okay.
or so. But you also don't have to buy a whole size keg. You
yeah,
can get a quarter barrel or a 6 barrel. Mm-hmm. Get 6 barrels, just over 5 gallons. You can go through that in a couple weeks.
Yeah, because you really don't want to drink the same beer for 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah, like a half barrel is 15.5 barrel, mm-hmm. Gallons. And that's a lot.
That's
the same
lot.
Style. Unless you get like something that you can drink a ton of every mm-hmm. day, like a light lager or mm-hmm. session ale or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, get it. But and then just get the smaller size kids.
There you go. Rob Zip says, talk about how much you love me in a dude bro way, dude bro.
Dude.
I would say how much I love you in a dude bro way, but really, Rob, I don't love you in a dude bro way. I love you in a little bit more than a dude bro way.
Mm. I think dude, love the Ren Fair posts.
Both know what we're talking about. Plus, Rob Zip and Friends podcast definitely love that and more than a dude bro way. John Dominic says, oh, Levi, don't buy a kegerator, buy a keezer.
Build a keezer, he says.
Build a keezer. You know what a keezer is?
Yeah, you take a freezer. And they're actually better,
mm-hmm.
Especially if you're getting the aforementioned 6 barrels. It's basically you get a freezer, and then you take it off at the hinges, and then put a wood kind of segment, and then put the top back on, mm-hmm. rehinge it. And then you can drill through the wood segment
right.
and put your handles there. And that way you can have like 4 different... kegs and
ooh.
4 taps and have a wide variety, and that way you're not gonna get burned out on just having one solid. No, keezers are cool. If I was gonna make one, I would definitely go keezer.
Keezer sounds cool, but it also sounds you need a lot of space for a keezer.
Well, a kegerator takes it probably takes a twice as much space as a K-grader.
Hmm. Interesting. I don't know. I've been to Levi's apartment.
Four times as many. Oh, they're both good. Especially if it's a good K-grader.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen some good-ass K-graders that have, like, a tower with three handles on it.
Mm-hmm.
For a pretty small footprint.
Oh, yeah, totally. Over at Dan's house.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then finally we got Josh Apunny Ego says, it was 18 degrees when I woke up this morning, so I figured that was cause enough to buy my first winter seasonal. You know what they say, if you can't beat winter, drink winter beers. And I think that's
damn,
a good motto to live by.
Rough.
Dude, 18 degrees, like, it literally never gets that cold in Seattle.
We're so spoiled. It doesn't drop below 30 and it doesn't get above 80. Right.
When I was in one year I was in Boise during the wintertime. And, you know, we were driving by the bank at night, and, you know, the banks always have the temperature gauge out, and it was like 13 degrees, and I was like, I have literally never been in weather this cold before in my whole life. Oh, man. Well, guys, thanks for the Facebook roundup. Time to move on to some recommendations. Jesse, you got any recos this week?
Yeah. I've been rewatching Firefly. It's a pretty good show.
Pretty good show if you haven't heard.
You can get it on Netflix and stream it.
Excellent.
And binge watch it in between your episodes of Daredevil and Axe Cop.
There you go. Speaking of Netflix, so we've made this confession before that I never really watched Breaking Bad. But now that the series is over and I can binge watch the entire thing, Lydia and I have been tearing through this series with gnashing teeth. It is the most amazing thing in the world. I love Breaking Bad so much. In fact, I'm kind of with Jim in that it is probably the most entertaining show that I've ever seen. So if you've been waiting up to this point to watch Breaking Bad, you can watch the thing on Netflix and just tear through it. It is an amazing, 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 amazing show. So Breaking Bad. Any your second reco?
Oh, Rainier Beer. Drinking it, loving it.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
Washington Zone, sort of.
And now they got the Rainier R back up in Seattle. Did you hear about that?
I did.
I love it. I haven't seen it yet because I don't go to South Seattle, but apparently it's back up. And then, finally, you know, I talked about it before, EDM, electronic dance music. Our good buddy John over in Boston really likes his stuff. And I was watching this video on Reddit, and it was like a time-lapse video, and it had this awesome like dance music song to it. So I looked through the comments to see if anybody said who the artist was, and it was this artist called Kill Paris. And, like, this is, like, good fucking electronic dance music. It's called Kill Paris. And the thing I like about it is that a lot of electronic dance music artists, all of their songs are, like, 12 minutes long. And it's, like, a lot of just, like, beat, 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 beat. But, like, Kill Paris gets to the point. All of his songs are, like, 2.5 to 3.5 minutes long. Nice, digestible EDM music. So, Kill Paris. And most of his songs are free. You can just download them from his website. So, Kill Paris. All right, dude, that's a show, man.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. We're going to spank this one on the bottom. And until next time, wherever you go.
Whatever you do.
Please stay,
arrogant. Thank you.